most of the things I want to make ultimately are kind of trying to say to the listener, isn't it amazing that we're alive? And what would be the result of noticing more that we're alive and imagining different ways of being?
And then the people asked me, why do you go in the gallery? Your mother is only 1 week dead. But I sing only this song every time we say goodbye. Only this song.
You need a kind of sensitivity maybe to feel your way through a story and not just say what you think it's about, but also to live and breathe it in a way.
Right then.
Maybe I can do a 1, 2, 3 and we can go like...
Welcome to Telling Stories. Welcome.
You can't do it on Zoom though because there's a delay.
Okay, maybe you do it and then I'll say it and then I'll try and layer our voices.
I want to live in a world where people celebrate beauty and sort of make wedding speeches all the time. I just think it's inherently poetic. Stories being things that you live inside, as in they're kind of like, I guess they create your reality.
Welcome to Telling Stories,
a school for exploring the art and craft of telling stories in sound.
Each episode we speak to a storyteller we admire, and they set us a bit of storytelling homework at the end, which you are more than encouraged to join us in. We're starting to release these in advance to give you a chance to work on it before next week's episode. Follow us on Twitter at @stories_pod to see what the challenge is going to be.
This week we spoke with Phil Smith. For me, I think his stories create a sense of space mixed with urgency. So it's like somebody's handed you a sand timer and flipped it at the same time. And you know that time's running out and all you can do is stop in your tracks and look at the world again.
We spoke to Phil about a story that he made called Time Brings Roses, which is kind of like a radio cabaret. It's set in Berlin and follows the story of Juvelia, an artist who owns a music gallery in Neukölln, where people come to enjoy life.
I think one of the main takeaways for me was something Phil said at the end of his interview, that storytelling is this constant push and pull between beauty and ache and magic and what's real, fiction and fantasy. So it becomes a sort of fragile ecosystem made of lots of different parts.
And just a quick note from me, you won't be hearing from me at the end of this episode. My mum's unwell and I'm spending more time with her over the next few weeks, which means I've got less time to complete challenges. But don't worry, you'll hear from the amazing Emily Naylor instead, who's a fellow learner and one of our very first challenge makers who we're now trying to bring into the fold.
Here's Phil Smith telling us how he first got into storytelling.
As a kid, I was just always really into radio, listening when I'd gone to bed, listening to PY's jazz show on Jazz FM. I liked the kind of liveness of someone speaking to you. And then when I finished a music degree, I sort of wanted to get into radio. But at some point I was like, right, okay, I want to sort of tell my stories. And I find what a story is interesting to explore, because often I don't think I'm a natural storyteller. I think like stories are things you kind of inhabit constantly, rather than necessarily having it a start and an end all the time. Although ultimately when you make a radio piece, you do have to have a start and end, so but anyway, apologies for the garble. As you can see, when I make my own stories, I edit myself quite extensively.
Well, I don't know if I'm skipping ahead too much there, but I just wanted to pick up on what you were saying about being a musician, because when I listen to your pieces, they often remind me of songs. Like, how do you think your training as a musician influences your storytelling?
I definitely think about them as pieces of music. And in fact, sometimes when I'm editing, I just want to get to the bit where I get to kind of mash all the voices together in ways that are just pleasing, just sort of singing to me and just that naturally I'm drawn towards. And then work out, okay, well, what do I need to do story-wise or kind of help the listener wise to get to the bit where we get to hear that. So it's basically like eating. I'm making a really good dessert, maybe. So like, what kind of rubbish main course and starter can I serve up so that the dessert, we can all get to dessert? I don't know, maybe that's not quite right. But yeah, it's like that's what I'm learning to trust more and more as I've gone on, and gradually just learning to be like, okay, well, that's, I can start with that and play with that and work out what this thing is saying a bit later, but first of all start with the musical aspect of things.
Sometimes I think it's easy to tell the story that you think people want you to tell, and do you ever feel like you're pushing against that tension in trying to deliver something that's more true to you and that kind of, you know, musicality, finding something that sings?
I mean, I always find it, there's always a lot of fear, and I always find it hard trying, and often worry about like what I sound like, or what I'm saying, or the, like these blind spots that I've missed by saying something. So I guess that's always there. Or is it kind of, am I being indulgent to the person who gave me this interview to then like make a kind of speech music thing from it with that? But then I suppose it's a mixture of like learning to have a go at something and then being able to say, actually, that is just indulgent, not really, not even that necessarily musical, or maybe that didn't work that time. But then you can sort of work out, okay, well, is it justified if it's part of a larger piece, or does it kind of obfuscate the person a bit? Is it kind of in keeping with what they would want? It's definitely like in there, but I think it's finding a balance so that you do get to still do the thing that makes you want to make radio, which for me is making quite musical things, or making music of, I guess, like real things.
We didn't see them. They were out of our sight. We didn't realize that. We didn't care. And it was a bit difficult to say goodbye to this illusion. But you know, you live in a very different time.
Valleys. Mountains. Water. Islands. Cities. Sorrow. Sorrow. Valleys.
That's what makes me want to make audio. So it's just a question of trying to find the balance. And if you have a good editor, letting them show you this bit works for me, this bit doesn't. That would be one thing I've definitely got better at, is trusting sending terrible first drafts out early. Like when I was starting out, I used to just hold on to them and just couldn't let go because I was just so scared that they would think that this is like the thing that I think's really good. Gradually I've got better at, or maybe it's just because I've been with someone like Ellie at Falling Tree, just working a long time with her and just being like, okay, I know this is nonsense, but I just have to get it out of my computer and then we'll have a chat about it and she'll kind of say, oh, I see what you're getting out there, and maybe not that stuff. But finding balance is like through other people as well, I think, which is obviously quite a hard thing to do when you're often just in your little box room with cans on.
Should we talk a little bit about Time Brings Roses? Do you want to just kind of explain what that piece is, Phil, for people who are listening?
Yeah. Time Brings Roses is the name of a song that Yuvalia wrote. And Yuvalia is a transvestite artist, painter and songwriter. And she runs a salon, a sort of cabaret salon. And I made, I suppose, yeah, a little feature around spending time there and about her and about why she does it, and I suppose it was also from a personal point of view a bit of a love letter to a place that I was in Berlin that I just loved going to. Yuvalia, the most beautiful woman in Berlin, but less compliments, she says. Prefer if you bought a painting.
All the world is coming to Berlin. Berlin is so wonderful. Where do you come from? I come from Spain, and you, oh, from Paris.
I guess a lot of it was about time, just like hanging out somewhere and then seeing what you've got, and at some point drawing a line under and say, okay, that's all, I can't record anymore now. I've got to like find the story within this material.
The trees in spring are pink and white. I think they could plant some roses.
The homeless people, you know, there's so many homeless people in Berlin. Many homeless people.
At Kottbusser Tor, there I lost my innocence. At Kottbusser Tor, where I eat with the homeless.
It is much too cold to stay outside for long, eating soup on the wooden benches. We hurry back to Juvelia's flat to warm up.
He is Juvelia only on stage. In our home, he is not so often Juvelia.
Not only,
but hauptsächlich draußen.
Sometimes it's Juvelia, sometimes it's Stefan, who shares this flat with Lothar. Stefan and Lothar have been together for 30 years.
This is just a stage where I make my first show here.
Anyway, if you find her paintings, there's just so much colour and detail and like loads of weird motifs in it that was really fun to try and create that in audio, because it was because she's a visual artist and all her songs are about like just sitting in her salon waiting for her lover and looking at the bins exploding, and I don't know, it's sort of really, she's just sort of sitting around noticing details, so, and then she paints them and then she like lives them and then she paints them again, and it's this really weird like blurring of her paintings, her like life, and then the songs about the paintings and the life. It's kind of all, it all overlaps. So that was what I think I was trying to do with the audio of the piece, was like, it's almost like translation, I guess, translating her pictures into sound. Her songs are already there, which I think is like one of my favorite things about radio, is generally the translation and translation generally between languages. I find it's such a beautiful thing to hear in audio. I love it. I think it's like, I would love to hear more of it. I just think it's inherently poetic. So
what are you trying to do, Phil, when you, if you have a translation, what are the kind of key things that you start with to try and lift?
A lot of it's just the kind of feeling, which with Juvelia's paintings is kind of this swoony, yeah, kind of slightly drunken, just vibrant love of life, I guess, and love of, yeah, colour, I guess.
Maybe you can talk more about the kind of details that you're searching for in those stories, because I think that's the thing that makes it almost so relatable, is that there's a bit of everything in it. I couldn't, for example, define that story in one sentence.
Yeah, I couldn't also. I mean, I think it's about, well, I think most of the things I want to make ultimately are kind of trying to say to the listener, isn't it amazing that we're alive? And what would be the result of noticing more that we're alive and imagining different ways of being? Yeah, I spend too much time in my life being annoyed that we're not just constantly bursting into song. So then I'm just like in a mood in the corner, like, why are we not? Why isn't it more collective joy? Should we burst into song? It's like, I don't know. I honestly spend a lot of time like that. It's like, I don't really know what to do. I just like want this to be more spontaneous. Sort of falling in love with being alive. And like, that's what I loved about Juvelia's place. And I think that's what everyone wants. And my housemate who's in the piece, she's an artist, and she was saying more and more beautiful, like that's her response to the world, like that's her kind of driving force in life, is like, it's got to be more and more beautiful. What can I do? Almost like everything, how would we imagine it? What would our actions be like if we were thinking about, we were thinking we're all alive, we're all going to die, how do we make this more and more beautiful? And that's like in that piece, In Time Brings Roses, because that's Juvelia's whole thing. She's constantly talking about dying and time running out. And yet her response is to like create this little kind of haven of colour. And I mean, it's sort of hedonism, but like everyone's drinking like tiny glasses of sect. It's not like everyone hooning down bottles of whiskey. It's like people are drinking just little glasses of like antique Prosecco. The gallery looks like a living room, really, filled with sofas and roses. The guests are lounging. Juvelia sweeps through, filling each glass in turn. In another moment, when I had drunk exactly the right amount of champagne, I should have a vision. I took a sip.
Very fun bar music.
And now, with extreme clarity.
It was a typical sound from bars in Berlin in the 30s.
Without passion or malice, I saw what life really is. It had something, I remember, to do with the revolving sunshade. Yes, I murmured to myself, let them dance. They are dancing. Sometimes I feel like they're too positive, some things I make. Or not too positive, but like they don't honour the kind of things I find more troubling or frustrating about myself or the world. Like I think if you do things that are too sweet, then and there isn't enough, like too, yeah, you have to have that mix of tragic and comic, or like real and magic, or I suppose true and fantasy. Just finding your way between those things, and maybe, and I guess there's always like a bit of a wrestling match in pieces that I like, where there is that sort of search for beauty and reaching towards stuff that's kind of feels true, and but then not forgetting the kind of ache of things as well, and the reality of things. It's like holding them together. I find I always go back to the start whenever I'm making a piece and listen through to it and see what it needs next. How does it feel to, when I get here, to go to this bit rather than that bit? What am I, as a listener, yearning for there? Or is it too sweet now? Do I need to kind of bring it back down to earth somehow? I guess it's that constant, yeah, push and pull.
Sometimes when I sing this, I think in my head, my mother. Yeah, when my mother made suicide, killed herself in 2016. And it was in April. I go in the house where I grow up and there was no heat. The house was so cold, no? Outside it was warmer than inside, no? Because the spring is coming in April. It was for me, I was, oh no. that was my impression. And then the people asked me, why do you go in the gallery? Your mother is only 1 week dead. But I sing only this song every time we say goodbye. Only this song.
I suppose I think the sort of stuff I want to make and the stuff that I really like, and I think it's good, as when it is touching on the kind of why are we here thing, and it's not necessarily got any particular answers, but just to try and open up a space for that rather than just news and numbers.
And doom. There's a lot of doom around, isn't there?
And doom, yeah. Numbers and doom.
Can I ask you about language? Because does it come naturally to you, or do you find yourself agonizing over words and what words mean, and or do you just sort of, does it sort of flow out of you?
I think if it's true, then it just flows out of me, as in, so like the true stuff around the interview encounter, say, so then it's just a case of like saying all the weird details you picked out on your way to meeting this person, or that were relevant to the encounter with this person, like maybe what they were wearing or where you were, or I don't know. So I think the weird things that are kind of out of kilter somehow with maybe what you're talking about, which can be quite interesting to, if you notice them, just to say them, maybe not always, but sometimes. But then, yeah, I can't just create stuff out of the blue. I always feel like I have to write between, respond to things, I think. And I think that's quite nice about writing for radio, is that you are usually, you're in the space between clips, or in the space between like worlds that you're trying to help the listener to go between, filling in some details that the listener might not know, or striking up a contrast between what the listener heard and what you actually thought of it, or so there's kind of like, there's something to respond to then, and then it's nice to find the right words. And but yeah, I find it hard to invent from nothing. Yeah, maybe I'll learn to do it, or maybe I'll learn to accept that that's not what I can do, and that's fine. I've realized I've done a lot of pieces like responding to poems, maybe like 3 or 4 or five. I like using this as a kind of framework or a thing to aim at, or even like a narrator. Like I think like a poem can be a narrator almost. Working out how to montage things around that is, and see how these words from many years ago often still have some relevance. That's like a way I like to generate ideas.
We can get so easily tossed into panic. And so how do we ground ourselves? How do we know that we belong to a living planet? I, like Brecht, have found it more and more useful to list everyday pleasures.
Daydreaming.
Sitting in the cafe.
Meeting slim.
I think I'd have eating in there.
When sunny, I'd like to take my disability scooter, go out, meet people.
Eating with others and cooking with others.
To watch Dancing on Ice.
How you feel when you read. You are the whole world when you're sitting and read.
Cooking. Traveling.
Fiction or poetry or a short story or a long story, whatever the kind of writing.
All the sheep.
Birds. Silence.
All the bunnies running round about.
Making friends, making relations, making love.
What questions or invitations does this thing generate? Why is this poem speaking to you? And what would you say to the author if you could meet them if they were alive? Because I suppose that's the thing, isn't it? It's like, what do I do? Like that's with the creative process. It's just like, what do I do now?
Yes.
Have I gathered enough stuff? Like, is this interesting to anybody else? Yeah, these are the constant questions.
I'm really relieved by that, though. I kind of wondered whether there would be a point where that goes away, but maybe that's something lovely about storytelling, is that this constant, that question of, is this going to be important to anyone, almost has to be there, because the story is maybe a two-way dialogue where it can only be finished once it's received by somebody and they make their own mind of it.
I think every time you put something on in, out there, you are saying, you are offering a story of the world. Like, and it could be that you need to respond to some really tough stuff, and your story might be more about healing, or it might be more about shining a light on things that are really wrong about the human world. Your stories could also be about just shining a light on kindness or people who don't usually get praised, or, and like, you don't have to do all of them. Like, you can just do maybe one, the type that you're good at, and just be like, yes, there's loads of people doing loads of other types, and that's great.
Yeah.
and loads of people interested in loads of different stuff. I know it's a very obvious thing, but sometimes when like something becomes really like big, I'm like, shit, I need to have my say on that or whatever. And then I'm like, oh no, you really don't. You really don't.
No, it is a factory. No, it is a beauty salon. No, it's a bar where you can drink something and you look so wonderful. Pictures. And it's a place for calm and cozy and schmoozy, ne? Schmoozy. Hast du auch schon geschmoozy? You have schmooze, ne? Oh, you can schmooze. Can auch noch schmoozy and schmooze. Jetzt sind die gegangen, ne? Sie sind gegangen. I'm sitting in my boudoir. The birds are singing. The people going fast. Sie reden über alte.
In her song, and before our eyes on the gallery stage, Euvalia is sitting on the sofa as the world outside carries on. Prams are being pushed. Young women grumble. Voices wonder how and from where you can borrow time. A baby cries. A suitcase rolls by.
Ja, time is gold.
We've been asking people to set us little challenges that will help us improve our skills. So do you have something that maybe we could go away and practice with, and that anyone who's listening can join in?
Kathy Fitzgerald and I did a Strange and Charmed course. It was like an invitation, because we were talking about a piece that I made, which is basically a story written around the sound my toilet used to make, kind of mooing cow lonely whale noise about 40 seconds after you pulled the flush. I wanted to write a story around this sound, what it meant to me, and then I ended up going to a plumbing shop and talking to some plumbers, and then also sort of told a story about a relationship that had ended. So my challenge would be, think of a sound that you have in your archive, which is quite a distinctive one, or something that means something to you, and then tell a story around that sound. What is this thing? What is this? What wants to be said about this thing?
That was Phil Smith with storytelling advice, and I think also some life advice, the value of looking at the world and looking again. So I'm welcoming Emily Naylor to the show. Emily, how did you find the challenge, and what was your archive sound?
So I picked a sound which I had gotten when I was recording my dad humming.
And as I was walking, I heard this humming.
So my plan was to hum a poem, or rather get my dad to hum a poem. And the particular line we were on was this.
You try again, but it's going to be a bit higher.
Okay, so perhaps humans humming fine literary works isn't the next big thing. But I stand by that there is something in there. I'm just not sure what. If I've learned anything from this creative endeavour, it's that humming is fun and trying to hum can be funny. And particularly for challenges like these, that's something worth exploring. So if you're feeling down, you got a frown, don't be glum, have some fun and hum.
So it was just great to play around with it and just explore how you can manipulate it and what you can come up with. So I had a great time.
It makes you pay attention to your world a bit more if you're really listening out for those slightly bizarre, unusual sounds that are also there every day.
Exactly. And I think giving them the limelight that perhaps they otherwise would never have gotten. So that's completely, you've hit the nail on the head. It's giving it the time and space to really listen intently and hear it in a different way. Phoebe, what about you? How did you find the challenge?
So I chose that sound that you get when you lick your finger and you run it round the rim of a glass, and I had an old recording of that on my phone. And I managed to track down some poor glass blower on the internet and, you know, wrestle him into an interview. And he started off firstly by telling me this wonderful story of him as a child going to Darlington Crystal Factory. And he describes all of the people in the factory moving together like a clockwork ballet, which was a really kind of nice description. And then he basically tells me, Emily, that he's got no idea why that sound
that
comes about.
Of you lick your lip and you go around the rim and it makes that beautiful singing. Do you know what that is? What is that? And why does
I have
it
no happen? Idea. That was the end of that question.
So that was the end of that question. But Tom went on to describe a childhood visit to the coast and how that experience of the landscape and the flint and the sea was something that he began wanting to translate into the glass. It took me back to what Phil was saying about the beauty of translation and allowing meaning to cross boundaries. And yeah, I really enjoyed that kind of landscape into glass, and what would that mean then, translating all of those two into sound.
My mum used to take me to the South Downs, and we used to walk over the South Down, a lot of flint there, so I used to see all this black and white rocks all over the place. One of my favourite ones was a place called Cookmere Estuary, winding down. We used to walk down that to the sea, and of course the beaches there are pebbles, so I thought it'd be really nice to have a seaside vase or something, you know. So I just have ideas and I write them down in a book. And basically my drawings are actually when I'm working with the glass. So I just write down ideas and then have a go. Quite often what you have in your head doesn't translate into the glass. So I mean, it took me about 2 years to actually come up with a design I was happy with. I don't do literal translation. Obviously, it doesn't look like whatever it is that you're, you know, it's just a vague connection to something you've got in your mind.
That was Phil Smith on Telling Stories. Thanks so much for listening.
And we'd love to hear any of your challenges, so please get involved. They only have to be a minute long, and they can be for any of the episodes you've heard so far. Send them to tellingstoriespod@gmail.com. If you go one, if you go like one, okay, two, well, three, then we can do it in time, because otherwise we're trying to hear the other one.
I'll try and do the start, and I'll do like two rounds, and then you come in, just kind of what we were doing before.
Okay, right? Yeah. Okay.
Welcome to